Okay, hello, welcome, hi, how are you, how you doing? Let's get right into the show. My friend Whit is on the show. Whit, it's been a while since Whit's been on the show. He was on the show back when People Pleaser was just a baby little podcast, back when we really were in a blanket fort. And now I finally got the home studio going. We got the blanket fort sign going. We got the double cameras, and Whit came in, and he was the first in-studio guest in a long time. And I'm not going to do a whole lot of pre-roll on this episode, because what happened is, since it was the maiden voyage of this version of, like, the video podcast with me switching between cameras and stuff and us figuring out all of that, there were a lot of technical difficulties, and I wound up not having a component that I needed that meant that my laptop ran out of power about, like, halfway through our recording session the first day. So we split it into two parts, and he came back the next day and we did the second half. But since we did it in two parts, we went a little bit longer than like a normal interview would go. So we wound up going like about an hour and 20 minutes, just me and him talking to each other, about an hour and a half. And so I just figured we'd just run with that today. Okay. My buddy Whit is back on the show. We're talking about forgiveness, and that's what it is. Whit's great. He's the artistic director and creator of a theater company called Riot Act. You should check it out. It's called Riot Act Theater. Go to riotacttheater.org and look at what he does. He's a really, really cool artist. I'm glad I'm friends with him. We've made music together. We've made theater together. We've made memories and joy together, and we're being real vulnerable boys together here on this episode, and I'm excited for you to hear it. All right, we're going to be chatting a little bit about our friendship and a little bit about our lives and getting real and raw. So here it comes from a Blanket Fort recording studio, the Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with one of my very best friends in the world, Whit Hertford, about forgiveness. Like the more I know, the less I know about. What are we even doing?
We lost a couple years.
Yeah, it's the first video episode. You're here.
I'm here.
You're here.
I'm here.
Like, we did it.
We did it.
It's the Blanket Fort. Like, we just spent the last 2 hours probably trying to figure out what was going on with this camera in here, because the camera had like the display information at the bottom of it, and I was like, what the fuck? And then it also had black bars on the sides of it, so we were trying to make it widescreen, trying to get the display information right. It was a whole fucking ordeal that I really don't care to ever repeat. As we were trying to head into like a pretty zen conversation,
like a
really peaceful conversation.
But, always.
Yeah, but instead the universe was like, nah.
No, we're gonna make it really stressful.
Make it really. Why does tech have to be like that? Why does tech have to be so hard every time? Why can't I paid for it to work? That's what I bought.
Right. But this is to bring it back into the Zen. Like I said, tech is only binary. So it either works or it doesn't work. There's no medium working.
I didn't pay for maybe though. You know, I didn't.
You don't pay for maybe. You pay for yes.
Yeah. Let's open our fake beers.
Oh my god, I love this so much.
Cheers across the room.
Cheersies. I feel like I looked like I've never opened a can before. That I was like that I'm like Donald Trump drinking like this.
It's like when you have to do something in a play and you're like, wait, how do I? Like, how do people walk?
You're like, wait, sit in a chair? Done it a million times. You fall all over.
Isn't that so weird? I watch all the time when I watch young actors in plays, like student actors. Uh-huh. There's always stuff like that where they're like, I just have to sit down here normally, like a person sits down. And you're like, how did you forget? How did you forget how to sit? You're just sitting.
Favorite. It's my favorite. Left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. It's my favorite.
Yeah, we both just went to open our beers and we were like, of course.
Like all of a sudden, I had like rigor mortis. I didn't know what I was doing.
Anyway, Cheers. We're in the blanket fort. You're the first in-person guest back in the studio. It feels so good to have a living, breathing person sitting across from me.
It's good dynamics.
You were here. You're one of, I mean, maybe like what, like episode 7, episode 8? Like you were like early on. This is episode 127.
Jeez.
Yeah. And you were here early on when literally we were sitting across from each other very close with like a divider up. I have this room divider and like an air mattress, and I put a blanket over that, and we sat across from each other like sweating, talking into.
It was hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I remember I was wearing like a light blue shirt, and I was like, well, that's a bad move, because I legitimately looked like I got out of a pool afterwards. You know, when you get those old man sweats, you're like, why am I sweating so much more? What's happening to me and my glands?
I can't promise you that you're going to sweat less this time. and this time we've got you
cool
on camera. So
tight. Super good.
You know, like in the fall and winter, it'll get a little bit cooler in here. And it's later. Part of the benefit of us struggling so hard to get the tech stuff up is that it's a little less hot outside now.
Yeah.
So, and we had a little bit longer in the space to have the AC on. So I think we should be okay. But yeah, welcome back, Whit.
Thanks, buddy.
I love you. It's good to see you.
I love you too. I'm nervous for this one.
We've been talking about doing this for a minute.
Oh, at least a year.
Yeah.
At least a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I always knew it would happen, but I knew it was going to happen when the universe was like, now I'm going to really, really get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, yes, very thematic. Very good.
That was a really good growl that you just did. And you're like, now that's a really
good growl. Bateman. That's my Will Arnett.
Hey, Bateman. Bateman over here is like,
that's Beetlejuice.
am I Michael Keaton?
Hey.
I'm trying to do Will Arnett, but I'm actually, hey, Beetlejuice, don't say my name three times.
That's what he says through the whole movie.
Don't say my name three times, or I'm going to show up and turn into a snake.
My favorite is when people do impressions. This is my favorite, one of my favorite things of all time. When people do impressions, but the only thing that they say when they do the impression is, hey, and then they say the person's name.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Be like, I got an impression. It's of Bob Dole. And they go like this, hey, I'm Bob Dole. Also, I dated myself so hard by saying Bob Dole. Like half of your audience is like, is he 80?
Bob Dole. This is a really good impression of Bob Dole. Who is me? I'm Bob Dole.
Hi, I'm Bob Dole.
I used to have this bit that I would do on stage when I was pretending to be a stand-up comic in New York, where I would do really good impressions of people you've never met. And I would do like my friends. I'd be like, oh, this is my friend, you know, like, and you know Chris. I'd be like, this is my friend Chris ordering a pizza. And I'd be like, oh, I don't know about that.
Perfect.
I definitely want pineapple.
Oh, it's actually perfect. We love you, Chris. That's perfect.
And then I'd tell people in the audience, like, just so you know, like, that's a lot like him. That's what he's like. But then I'd go, okay, cool. Now I'll do some impressions of people you know. So I'd be like, the other day I was walking through Times Square and I bumped into Christopher Walken. And like everyone knows, like, oh, it's Christopher Walken. And they're like, and I walked up to him and I was like, hey, you're Christopher Walken. And he didn't say anything, but like, you can imagine what it'd be like if you did.
That's a good bit. That's a good bit. I really like that.
Just like refusing to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, I just walked up to Chris Rock on the street. And he was like, hey.
Great.
Perfect. He was in a hurry. He couldn't stop and chat. But
I've tried so many things performance wise. I've never tried stand up. It really, really gives me those. Nervous poops. I can't. No way, Jose.
I could never do it legit. I mean, I did that show in November, that show in Vegas, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. And after that, I was like, yeah, I can't do that.
Because I feel like I could probably get to the part of prepping and confidence. But if I get there and it's the gauntlet and that truth serum does not give me what I want back, I will unravel. I would for sure unravel. I do not think I would be brave.
Yeah.
No.
You mean like if you bomb? Like
yeah. I'll just start crying. I'd probably just start crying. I'm like, you're right. You're right. Nope, that's the right response. I'm so sorry.
I don't know why I thought I could do this.
What do I do to make it up? What do you need?
I was so right to be this nervous.
It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea.
Okay, so we're nervous doing this episode. It's been a long time coming. I wanted you back in person here. I wanted it to happen this way. I thought I was going to have the in-home studio set up sooner. You know, I thought a lot of things. I thought that COVID wasn't going to last as long as it has. I thought that we'd be back to doing in-person interviews faster. I thought I was going to have the home studio in a place where I wanted it sooner. I thought I was going to have two cameras, but like we finally got it. I got both microphones. I got both cameras. I got that sign behind you that haven't figured out how to light it yet so I can turn it on. Let's just look at it really quick.
Yeah,
just
give
so
it a blinky.
Just so that people can see.
Boom, 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 boom.
That's what it does.
Yeah, sexy.
But it's sort of blinking. It's sort of going like, let's look at some of the modes. Maybe should we just embrace it and just have that behind you the whole time?
No, because I think that that's the thing with like epilepsy.
Oh, okay. So I should figure out how to stop this now.
And also, if anybody was pregnant that just watched that video, that they're now not pregnant.
That's what that does.
That's what happens.
That's what happens.
Can't go on that ride.
Yeah, so we're going to figure out how to light that so that it can be on and have a cool ambiance. But like, I'm feeling good about the vibe.
It's a great vibe. Temperature's great.
And it took us a while to get the cameras going, but I'm feeling good now. Like, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have been friends. We've been on a friendship ride for a while. So we're talking about forgiveness, and I think we can start in a space of, like, what it takes and to forgive someone close to you and to forgive a friend or forgive a family member or something like that.
Mm.
And then we'll move into, like, you know, things like forgiving yourself and self-forgiveness and what's important about that.
Exactly.
But, you know, you and I in our friendship, because we're both people who require a lot of...
I like watching you search for these words.
We require a lot of forgiveness from the people in our lives and from ourselves. We find ourselves regularly in situations, people who require a lot of forgiveness. It's also required of us to figure out how to forgive too, because if you're constantly, if you're a person who's constantly requiring forgiveness from other people and constantly requiring other people to offer you their grace, you also need to be good about figuring out how to offer sufficient forgiveness and sufficient grace.
Yeah.
You know? Are we going to get into like our beef, like specifically, or are we just going to talk about the fact that like we've beefed in general?
Give the people what they want, man. Let's get gritty.
Let's get gritty. Give them the details, the deets and the drama.
I mean, yeah, this is your show. You can edit however you want, but let's do it. You only live once. YOLO.
I wasn't on you for that whole thing. I was just reacting to you that whole time we were talking. So now I'm giving you the reaction shot while I'm talking.
Cool. Great.
This is also my first time operating the switcher. And I'm like...
Fired.
I'm trying to be good about that. So far, I think I've been doing a pretty good job.
I have no idea.
You'll see it later. Like, you'll watch it on YouTube and see how I did.
What if it's just you? And then there's momentary moments where it's like, beep, beep. And I'm like, you son of a bitch.
The whole time I've been pressing the wrong button for your camera. So it just, I actually did early, you'll see this, early in the stream, I pushed 3 and it went to black for like 3 seconds.
Cool.
So it happened for like 3 seconds. And I looked, I saw in the screen that it was black and I was like, oh no, it can't be like that.
Oh no.
And so I now just have my thumb toggling between 1 and 2. And so I'm just going back and forth.
Seamless. Couldn't even tell.
The audience, the idea is that they're not going to know. It's going to feel like I've got an audio engineer in here or someone who's operating that.
Yeah.
And
oh, it's in your lap.
It's sitting in my lap.
I thought you were masturbating.
I was so nervous about this episode. I just thought I would kind of...
You're like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
In moments of nervousness.
I do a little sneaky rub. I do a little sneaky rub. I don't think we can get into every beef you and I have ever had.
No, we don't have 3 hours.
The last one was, the funny thing about it is I think that it was, I mean, it, like most things, if you, Do you remember what it was?
I'm not charting what the last one. No, go ahead. Keep going. I mean, I'm sure you're right. I just can't place it.
The last one I remember is I was heading to Utah for the holidays.
Oh, fuck. Yes, and, can't remember this.
Yeah, okay. And you had asked, you said, hey, are you going? Because we both have family in Utah. And you said, hey, are you going to Utah for the holidays? And I said, yes, I am. He said, if you're going, can I catch a ride with you? Mm. And I said, yeah, absolutely. But I let you know, I think I did. This is from my perspective of it, is I thought I said, yeah, like, I don't know when I'm leaving yet, because I might have something that I have to shoot there, or sure. Like, there might be something I have to be there for, but, like, I'll let you know what the schedule is, and you can come with us if it works for you.
Right.
Anyway, it came up. I was going to be there early shooting something. I can't remember what, but I was like, hey, I'm leaving on this date, and I'm going to be there till this date. And I was going to be there for, like, 12 days or something, and I think for you, you were like, oh, that doesn't really work for me. That's a longer window than I was hoping to do.
Correct.
Or something
that's
like that.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And that was what caused the friction, was I was like, oh, well, I mean, that's when I'm going. And you were kind of like, oh, well, I wish you would have considered that.
I think I just was like, it's Christmas. You go for the Christmas week.
Yeah.
And then I was confused because that's not what you had scheduled. And I think more than anything, what I did, and this is pinpointing how these things go awry, is that I wasn't taking facts and I wasn't taking your side of the story. I was literally riding an emotional wave. Uh-huh. And I was like, how do I feel? What does this do for me? And I was in a whole place of selfishness, which I tried to be quiet about, but clearly it was like I was not communicating that's all good. Like, you know me too well that even in text, if I'm like, okay, then you're like, you bitch.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
And that's probably, I think that was what was happening. I was also working like a PA gig, which like real people jobs in general, I'm not good at. And so I was stressed out about that. And I was also, I think, kind of fielding texts from a person I was dating that was very, very needy. And
well, I think that this has been a theme in both of our stories of part of the reason why we wind up requiring grace and forgiveness from people is historically we don't always have the best ability to move through our initial emotional response to something.
Right.
We have an emotional response and it's colored by any number of things. We're in a stressful situation in our work life or in our personal life with our relationships or a combination of the two. And someone says something or does something that rubs us the wrong way or that makes us feel some kind of way. Usually, I mean, and what this is like what I'm learning in therapy and shit like this is like what it actually is it's fear. Mm-hmm. So anger that I have when I lash out at someone, anger and resentment, it's a secondary emotion. It's it's what my fear converts into. So something that someone is saying or doing is making me feel fear in some way. It's making me feel insecure or making me feel not taken care of, or like the thing that I needed to do is not going to happen now because this person's fucking it up. That's making me feel fear, and my fear always makes me feel insecure. And the way that I behave in that space sometimes is I lash out, and yeah. And so like my inability to take stock of and take inventory of my emotional state and my initial emotional response. And my inability to have a pause after that initial emotional response often leads me to like snap at people or say something that later I wish I could go, whoops, that was too hot. Or even just later, I just wish I had not said that thing.
Well, I think we also share this thing where, and I certainly did this much more, but like on full blast level 10 a lot, was we dig our heels in. So mm-hmm. like if we have an assertion and it feels like that works for me and I need to move on with my life or this conversation or this day, whatever, that we're like incapable of like pulling our heels out and we're not that we're incapable, but that's what gets us stuck, I think, a lot of the time. And so as simple as just going like, yeah, just like, okay, let me hear what's happening. Today I had a thing where I had a situation with a person where I could have fought back. I could have been defensive. I could have like pled my case. It just wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. What was really much more worth it was the forgiveness, was the recovery. And so what that required out of me, I think, and it was a success, was to just listen harder and to try so hard to be in that other person's shoes. I think it's so hard to like stop, press pause and go, but how are they looking at it? Because like normally, who fucking cares? We're selfish beasts. So we're like, I don't care. It's cool. It's not about them. It's about me. And that has been like a saving thing for me, to just simply make those little changes and ask questions. That's another huge one with forgiveness and arguments or whatever, is to like ask questions. Because usually more information is going to give you more context and it's going to give you a clearer picture. And things that you made quick assumptions towards are obliterated.
Yeah, and the situations where that are really hard to get out of, where there's a lot of digging in of heels, like you said, sometimes things that make it hard to undig heels is like when I've already said too much too quick before I could get to the place of asking questions and being curious and saying, hold on, what happened here, and having that pause. I've already shot my mouth off. I've already said too much. And now it's like, even if I want to be curious and go, help me understand here, we're already doing that portion from a place of being like, you just said some shit that like, I'll try to answer your questions and help you out, but like, understand, it's hot over here. Like, I'm not cool right now because of what you just said and the shit you already said. So like, I'll try to help you out here, but also like, after we're still going to need some space at some point with this. And so there's that. And also I think, what did I do? I pushed a button that I shouldn't push on the switcher.
It was blinking red. I thought there was going to be a bomb.
You see that?
Yeah. Was there a bomb?
It almost exploded. That was the explode button.
And don't push that. Please don't push that.
They shouldn't have it. Like, that's the thing, is like,
so unnecessary.
It's so unnecessary, but like in certain cases with like certain movies, they've needed to like quickly explode their equipment.
Just explode everything. Yeah. I get it.
So it's on there. Like, that's why there was like a union thing where they didn't have an explode button on some of the equipment.
I heard about that.
And like, some guy was like, I needed this to blow up.
And he was like, where's my explosion button?
Yeah, and it like,
fucked up. You have an old model.
It fucked up like a $20 million shot. And so now all the models have explosion buttons.
Thank God. We're so stupid. I love our run.
I'm going to get like, I think for, God, first time handling this thing, I'm going to figure it out. But what I was
you should
say,
have it with Google Glass and like blink for your different switches.
That's easier.
It won't look weird at all.
Yeah.
Google Glass. Is that a thing? Does that still exist? Do people still have computer glasses?
Who just released one? I was at VidCon and Ray-Ban has they did like a partnership with like Apple, I think. And they've got like a really cool pair that I got to try on that are like dope.
Is that like, commercial with like a Tom Cruise impersonator and it's Risky Business?
Oh, yeah. Because
that's what it should be. Call me.
Yeah.
Ideas!
Yeah. What I was going to say also about digging in heels is like, there's also this thing that I have that you might have this too, but, and it's a problem and it's a thing that I have
to
work
about
on.
What I...
Which I'm saying you might, which is I need to be right.
Yeah.
I got to be right, you know? And so, especially in that situation that you and I experienced, I felt really right. And there's nothing more dangerous for me in a situation where like I'm about to have like a problem with someone than when I feel like I'm right.
Well, we also, Austin, to our credit, I don't think either of us want, we're not cruel people. But if we have something that kind of registers funky with us, what we will do normally is we'll sit on it for a little bit, but it just starts boiling and boiling and boiling. And sooner or later, that explodes, explosion button.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's why that's there.
Right. So, you know, I think, again, it's like in situations where I remember I was was dating this one person who ended up becoming a wife, and I early on we were dating and we had just a little hiccup or whatever, and we were in my car, and I said something kind of flippant, not necessarily, you know, outrageous, but it was flippant and it was like stupid. And she immediately, within like 3 seconds, she took, I can like vividly remember this. She took a breath and then she went, "Wait, I don't like that you said that." And it was, and I just went, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I should not have said that." And again, the second part of that, of whatever, apology 101, is like not only recognizing it, but letting the apology end without trying to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That works wonders, because you, at the end of the day, it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't fucking matter if it's just going to keep going and be cyclical and be in a pattern to plead your case, because again, right, you're trying to be right.
Well, I mean, this is why I think that 12-step programs can be good for so many more people than just addicts and stuff, because I think like people need to be taught how to properly apologize and how to like what that actually looks like. And it's been such a revelation for me to realize that like there's so much more power in telling someone very clearly that you are aware of where the harm was done. You are aware mm-hmm. of how you did harm and what mm-hmm. you did to do harm, and then not qualifying it in any way. No ifs, ands, or no, but like, here, look, I'm aware that I did this, this, and this, but you have to acknowledge that you kind of did fucking egg me on.
Goes nowhere.
Nowhere. And that is not an actual apology. And we like, it's a really hard thing for a lot of people to do, because they're like, even if they're being really clear about what they did wrong, even if they're like, I said this, 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 and this, shouldn't have said those things. I acted from a place of insecurity and fear, and I own all of that. But I gotta hear from you that you know that you also did this that triggered me. You know, like,
we get sick satisfaction from hearing them feel shame, guilt,
right?
Acknowledgement, right? We get really off on being like, do you feel bad for that thing that you did?
Yeah, like, I'm owning what I did. Mm. I just need to hear you say that you're aware that you were also...
And then we're good. And then we're all good.
Yeah, and then it's forgiven. Uh-huh. Then it's forgiven. Mm-hmm. So, like, conditional forgiveness, conditional apologies, things like that. And that's something that in AA they really harp on, where it's like, no, when you go around making your amends, you are not explaining to people, like, why... Like, even when I say stuff like... Like, tell someone, like, I was really sick then. I was not doing well, and I was really in my sickness and really in, like, my alcoholism. I'm not offering an excuse. I'm not telling them. And it's very clear in the process. It's like, this is not an excuse for my behavior. I'm just letting you know where I was and, like, what that was coming from, and that it's not about you. Like, you didn't do anything to deserve that. It was all me. I was really in an unhealthy place, and I was really, like... you know, really owning it and taking accountability for it. Even in situations where like, so like before you do an amends process, you go through all of your inventory with people where like you'll break down the resentments that you have toward people. And usually in the root of it, there's always something that you are responsible for too. And a big part of that is like releasing those people of whatever it is that they did to contribute to that situation.
Okay.
Because you don't control other people and their actions and their behavior. So oftentimes I would be making an amends to someone that was about something where like in the back of my head somewhere, I know that I'm like, well, I know that we each played a part in this thing, but my job in this situation is not to take your inventory. My job is not to list out what we both did. My job is to be responsible for my behavior.
Yeah, just yourself.
And that's it. And you experienced this today a little bit with what you were telling me about, that like the experience of it's like when you take that pause and don't act out of the first emotional impulse or feeling, you allow the other person to also have that same pause. They can mirror that back to you. And it's the same thing with a true apology where you're like, I'm just going to own what I did and be really clear about that and not qualify it. oftentimes what you see is you get that back from the other person. They'll go, oh, thank you so much. That's so lovely to hear. Also, I just want to say, like, you know that I wasn't perfect in that situation either. And
happens all the time.
Yeah. Not that that's necessary. Not that that's required.
No.
And we really shouldn't have that requirement that, like, well, I'm going to say this, but they better fucking say it back. It's like, no, I'm offering this. Like, I'm offering this free of charge.
You gotta love with no expectation that it's going to be returned. And likewise, you gotta forgive with no expectation that it's going to be accepted.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And that's a whole difficult part of this. But I think a big part of forgiveness is learning how to make amends and how to, like, clearly apologize. Because a lot of people don't fucking, full-on adults don't know how to do that.
No. And also because their vulnerability comes into play. And if people are not comfortable being vulnerable, then it's just going to be so much easier to just, like, write them off, ghost them, not talk to them. Or what is really probably the most insidious and poisonous thing is that if we don't take this moment as quickly as you can process it through and take onus, take accountability, take inventory, let the other person say what they have to say, ask follow-ups. It's like all of this, like, constructional stuff that you will start to embed and cement a narrative that then becomes the thing where you're then the victim. And that's a part of forgiveness for me, where forgiveness and victimhood kind of swim in the same patterns, and I have to choose forgiveness over victimhood, because it's really easy to be the bereaved and the one that is carrying the scars. You tell that story to other people that have no idea about it, weren't there, are gonna just probably side with you because they care about you, it gives you this relief, but it's not getting to the heart of the matter. And so then you just start to really bake that in. And I feel like if you do that too often, if that becomes a pattern and habitual, that it just gets harder and harder to break out of that, because it's so justifying. Because running away, not trying to communicate with the person, can feel good if you can just move on, right? And so people will go, like, they will choose that. They will choose, you know, that's the flight element of it, where if they fight or they flight or they flee, that's that element. And I just try really hard. I hate losing people, you know. And mm-hmm. I told you that today. Loss for me is a thing that, like, I still struggle with, because I'm perpetually 5 years old and in trouble. Yeah. Like, my PTSD is that, like, if somebody is upset with me, that's the worst feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I don't know how to make it better as fast as I want it to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's a big thing that I deal with, that I have to, like, constantly fine tune.
I mean, I think it's important. So, you know, in our story that we were telling, obviously we've gotten to a place of reconciliation.
It didn't happen right away.
No.
We took time off.
No. Yeah.
Like the biggest time we ever have.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not like it.
Yeah. Took a break. Yeah. Yeah. We're okay. We're back.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think, oh God, you were saying something in there about about forgiveness, the thing that we're talking about. There was a part in there that I latched onto that I'm forgetting now.
It'll come back.
Yeah, it's fine. We can move on for now. I wanted to talk a little bit about, okay, you talked about losing people. You don't like losing people.
Well, you were talking about our story in that example. Is that what you were trying to remember?
Yeah, our story was part of the next thing I wanted to talk about. But then you said something that I was like, oh, that's good. I want to talk about that. Oh, I remember what it was now. you were talking about...
it's great. It's great. It's engaging.
Yeah, I've lost it. But it's like there. It's in the tip of my brain.
Just keep talking.
I'm going to hit the explode button. Let's just start over.
That's when it's needed.
Ejector seat. That's what it's for.
Whoa!
That's the end of the show.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah, so... Yeah, in our story, like, you talked about fear of losing people and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think there's some people that this is a difficult topic with because they have people in their lives who have done such egregious harms to them and wrongs to them that they can't imagine moving on from that or forgiving that person. You know, really, really serious wrongs that were done to them. And this is what I was going to say. You talked about this, people who like hanging on to that feeling of like the victimhood, that this is what it was. Yep.
There you go.
Found it. forgiveness and victimhood swim in the same circles. You said, you can really define yourself by like the wrongs that were done to you. And this is something that you and I have talked about, how like it can be sort of a red flag in the dating world when someone, whenever you ask them about like their previous relationships, when all they have to say is just like bad stuff, like, oh no, he was awful. He totally. Was toxic. He was an abuser. Not that that's not legitimate. Not that people don't actually go through that. Not to delegitimize the experience of someone being like, I really was in a relationship with a bad person. But that the fact that that person is choosing in their life to define the story of what's happened to them through a lens of wrong was done to me.
Well, and feels a little manipulative, right? In a way, maybe subconsciously, that the what they're doing, what they're presenting to you is manipulative because they want to get your validation.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I have no way of knowing what actually happened inside that relationship. And that I don't really think that I want to – this is tricky territory because it could sound like I'm saying like, you know, they're a bunch of fucking liars. You know, like they're just lying women who – like that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking specifically about people who have chosen that the story that they're going to lead with when they're introducing themselves and describing themselves and their history with relationships is that they have been a victim, which to me, there's an undertone in that which means you haven't done the work to let go and to forgive whatever it was that happened in that situation. It's still hot in your, it's still in there and it's still defining you, the wrongs that were done to you. And it's that whole thing, it's that old adage about resentment where it's like, resentment is like drinking poison and wanting the other person to die. Like it's inside you. It's not actually doing anything to that other person. I've been in relationships with people where like they had problems that were part of past relationships. And I'd be like, I'm not that person. So you have a problem in this relationship that's based on something that someone else did. And that person that you're mad at is out living their lives somewhere. Totally. And it's not me. Totally. And it's somebody else. And you're having your current life corroded and fucked up by the fact that you're still hung up on this resentment. And it's not to say that people don't have justified reasons to be upset or that they didn't actually have wrongs done to them. It's to say that like forgiveness isn't just for the other person. If anything, it's more for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I'm trying to see how I get into this correctly.
I just took forever, so take your time.
No, for a very long time, this is a full admittance, and it actually feels really good. For a very long time, I would say the same stories about certain people that made who I was at that time and the struggles that I was going through some people sympathetic towards me. And it wasn't until like 2017 where I took a real legitimate pause and break and recalibration and a spiritual journey and realized that that wasn't helping me progress, to hold on to those stories, to hold on those versions,
yeah,
and right. to not think of what it's like for these people. I think it's very easy to find out. I've been married more than once. I love love, but I also was young and raised religious, so I got married young because that's what you do. And then I just tried it a couple times, and I was dumb. You know, I was really young, and I was really, I didn't know who I was. And I felt like, because I didn't know, are we okay?
Shit. See, this is the problem. The laptop's going to die.
Oh, no.
No. So this is obviously where the technical difficulties happened, and we had to shut it down and come back for day two. So here we go. Here's day two. And we're back.
We're back.
We said we were going to be right back.
We took a half day.
We took a day. We took 24 hours. Turns out it was a tougher problem to fix than I thought. Fucking tech stuff, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, you did it. You did it well, though. I think it could have been more of a catastrophe. And this is, you know, it's all trial and error.
It's all right. I've been trying so long to get, you know, the video portion of this podcast going. We got it going. I have to forgive myself.
That's right. This is thematic.
Yeah, I have to forgive the universe for giving me a shoddy HDMI cable. I have to forgive Apple.
Forgive Apple.
I have to.
You don't want to.
I don't want to. They don't deserve my forgiveness. No. But I deserve to forgive Apple. I deserve to not live with the resentment.
Trump called him Tim Apple.
He did.
And everybody around went, just let it go. Tim Apple. Tim Apple was like, that's like calling somebody Fred Macaroni. That's just like two words.
I mean, yeah, like he's one of the, I mean, he's like the quietest of the billionaires.
This is my, Mrs. Fields. This is my friend, Debbie Cookie.
You'd be forgiven for forgetting what Tim Cook's name is. Like,
yeah, Cook is pretty basic.
I just had to think, as I was saying that, like, is that right? Is Tim Cook correct? But yeah, Apple for some reason put two USB-C ports on their new MacBooks, and regularly you need more than two, and they have the space for three or four. Sure. That's all they have. They don't have they used to have like all the different ports. They would have like HDMI, USB, like the Ethernet. Like they had all these different ports. Now they have two USB-C ports. That's it on the entire thing. And I'm like, give me three.
Yeah, why did... I don't know.
Yeah, and so I had to go and buy this piece that's a splitter that splits into two USB-C ports, so now you have three.
Yeah.
And it was hard to find. I had to go to three different Best Buys to get it.
You went to Fry's, he went to Best Buy, he went to...
I didn't go to any Fry's.
Target.
I didn't go to Fry's. I did go to a Target, and they didn't have it there.
I had a stepdad that loved the Fry's, and he was like... He always thought that was like a cool outing, and I was like, not really. It's Quartz.
Yeah, Fry's makes a big... It's Quartz. Fry's makes a big appearance in Nope.
Yeah. Which is cool, because it is like designed really cool, but also when you're a preteen that hates his stepdad, and he's like, hey, you want to go over here and go check out some bleep, 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 and you're like, it's just Quartz, bro.
It's Quartz. It's like, aisles and aisles of Quartz.
So many Quartz.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't need that. But I got it. We got it sorted. The next thing, I did an episode like a year and a half ago called Gear with my friend David Rosenblatt, where we just talked about like the accumulation of gear, how when you're making music or when you're making content from home, and like the process of getting more and more gear. And it really is a never ending process. With every new piece I get, there's always some other little piece that I haven't gotten that's been left off the list that needs to be found. And it's just, it never ends. There's always more gear to get. And so even just this little splitter, I didn't think I needed because I had the HDMI cord going into the fucking, the capture card that I had. And then that shitted out. So I had to use it's a whole thing.
The whole thing.
You know, and now there's the final thing that, I keep saying the final thing. It's never going to be the final thing that I think I need to get is I need to figure out how to have that blanket fort sign on while also lighting you well. Because like we
showed off.
We looked at this. We looked at this on yesterday's episode too.
Yeah.
Like It's not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's just that your face gets a lot darker when it's on. And maybe we'll watch this on YouTube later and I'll be like, no, really, it doesn't. Like, maybe it's just that, like, the difference between that and that is significant.
Okay.
It doesn't feel like it, but I can't see from what I'm looking shit. At. I'm going to figure it out. That's one of the last pieces I say. But once I figure that out, there will be something else where it's like, but if you really want to be professional about it, yeah, you need this piece of gear. And whatever. We're back with part two.
And we're back.
We're making it work.
Here we go.
Yeah, should we?
Let's do this now.
Hazy boys.
Hazy boys.
Little hazy. Hold on. Last time I got to be shown popping my thing, you pop it this time.
Okay. So slick.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Cheers.
Cheers, brother. All right. I like it. Traditions.
Yeah. This is a tasty one.
It's hazy.
Yeah.
Hazy for your pleasure.
I feel like I need to reiterate for anyone in my audience that's confused. They are fake beers. It's a thing I've been doing lately. I had a big reservation about fake beer for a long time. I was like, nah, that's going to fuck me up because it tastes too close to the real thing. And then I'm just going to want a real beer. And I was hanging out with another sober guy like 6 months ago and he busted one out. And I was like, what are you doing? I was like, don't do that. And I was like, and he was like, it's fine. It's not real. And I was like, but don't you then want a beer? And he was like, not really. He's like, this actually kind of like scratches the itch for me.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, because it doesn't have alcohol in it, I don't need, like, it doesn't have that chemical response of being like, I need more.
Yeah.
It's doing the thing that it does to my brain that makes me want more. It just scratches the itch of like, I miss that taste, that like refreshing, crisp taste of an IPA.
It's good. You ever had fake heroin?
Yeah. And so it's good. The same thing. It's great. Like, it's all delicious. I really want is that, like, the feel of something going into my veins?
The feel of heroin.
The feel. Yeah.
We're just feelers.
It's the process. I like burning it in the
spoon.
I
like a little bit of needle and a little bit of I might die.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're good.
I just need a little pinchy pinch. I go, it's the ritual of it is what it is.
Yeah.
Because I actually have talked about this with, now that I'm drinking fake beer again, is like, it does actually help when I go to a bar to not just have tonic water and a lime. Especially now, not all bars carry fake beer, but like the ones that do, it's nice to participate in the ritual of like being in that social setting and getting to order the drink that goes with that social setting.
I gave you a tasty one last night.
Oh, yeah. Cherry Guinness.
Little berry Guinness.
Berry Guinness.
Put some, well, you say berry, but it's just grenadine in a Guinness, and it tastes like a goddamn motherfucking strawberry milkshake.
Which, by the way, Guinness Zero, they're not sponsoring this episode, but like my full endorsement as like one of the best fake beers out there on the market. Guinness Zero is it's Guinness. Like it's Guinness. They have it all over Ireland too. I just got back from Ireland, and because Guinness is such a big part of their culture, so many bars had Guinness Zero draft. And it was great because it meant that I got to, like, be in, again, participating in, like, the ritual of being in Ireland. You've got to have a Guinness with your stew. And, what you know, like,
yeah,
you have to.
Yeah. I mean, when I lived in London and they're drinking at 2 and 2:30, it's like, you don't get weird about it. You go and you have a pint. It's over a business meeting or whatever. And you got to watch it because that's a real slippery slope. But
oh, yeah. I know all about that. Yeah. Yeah.
We're just hanging, man. We're just hanging.
We're just hanging.
Talking about NAs, you know?
Blanky Fort style.
It's real 40.
Yeah. Okay. We were in the middle of something. We were on a roll.
We were on a roll.
Yeah. And I think we were saying good stuff. We talked about how people need to be better about learning how to apologize better and be clearer and, you know, not doing conditional apologies and not doing conditional forgiveness.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to, like, go in deeper on. You were in the midst of talking about stuff with relationships and stuff, and that kind of goes to where we were at. I wanted to go in a little bit deeper on this because I think one of the things that makes this difficult for people, and I already think I said this yesterday, but is sometimes people have people in their past who they're like, I'm sorry, but that person does not deserve my forgiveness. That person did such egregious wrongs to me or harms to me that, like, I'm okay living the rest of my life and be, you know, essentially, for lack of a better term, dying mad about that, you know, because like that person doesn't deserve my forgiveness.
Yeah.
And I like,
some people hold on to grudges like crazy.
Yeah. 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 And I want to say, like, I fully understand it. I get
that. Sometimes they're somewhat justified.
Yeah. That people go through shit that you're like, yeah, you didn't deserve that. That's not okay what that person did to you.
Completely.
And it's not about, I don't think that forgiveness is always about, in fact, I don't know if it's ever about saying that what was done was okay. I don't think that that's what's being said.
No.
And I also think that when it comes to like, that person doesn't deserve my forgiveness, what I wanted to say is like, but you deserve to live in a space where you have forgiven that harm and where you have healed from that harm and moved on from that. You deserve that.
Because that has to happen. And like, look, man, neither one of us have doctorates or degrees in any of this stuff. But what we do have is that I do feel like we've been through the shit. And, you know, I feel comfortable and good about talking about it. And that is a crucial element of it, that if you don't have that part where you can apply forgiveness for that, and sometimes it's like, forgive the act, forgive the incident, but you don't have to like love the person and then all of a sudden be homies with them again or try to rekindle something. There could be something where it's like, I don't really need that person in my life at that velocity or ever again. That's okay. I can have that boundary, but I'm not going to always, like I said last night, replay the tape that's like, but that one thing they did, that thing. I know a person that's very, she's my mother. And my mother is a lovely...
You really danced her. I know a person, am I going to say it? She'll
never hear
She's
this.
My mother.
We love her. We love her. She's so fun. She's the greatest. She's kind of a... She's lived an amazing life. She is cutthroat. If you cross her, you're done. You're done. And I've seen like her friends, a couple of her friends, do something pretty meaningless. Or like she got half information from it. And... she never speaks to him ever again. And I've asked her about that. I was like, why did you? In fact, this just happened with my aunt. I don't like when people say aunt, by the way. It always makes me feel real weird.
What do you think about auntie, when people say auntie? I mean, not for us, but that's kind of a thing in like the black
community. It sounds like a yawn.
Auntie.
Like,
my aunt. But
it is more of, it's a thing. It's a culture thing.
Yeah, it's a culture thing. Like my aunt.
Totally get it. But anyway, my mom hadn't talked to my dad who passed away, sister-in-law, sorry, for like 25 years. And I was like, why? And she's like, I don't know. She always just didn't feel like she embraced me. And I was like, yo, write an email. She wrote an email and it was this huge like rekindling they've had this past week where she's like, do you want me to read it to you? It's a really great email. And I just thought, you know, sometimes people kind of stick in their ways, in their corners, and we go about our days. We go about what's comfortable, what's familiar, and what's not going to be that high risk, high reward. And forgiveness is high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
Because you may, like I said yesterday, you may not get the response you want. There's a lot of people that I would love to see again. You know some of these people that really I felt like had a vendetta, had something against me, was really trying to like drive the knife in. And I'm still like, I would go have coffee with them. And I would really try to bury the hatchet because that's so much more interesting to me than anger. Well, and I'm not trying to be like a Christ figure here or anything, but it really, like, anger is not my homie, and I don't mess with anger really much.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned this yesterday also, that you have a hard time, you don't like losing people. And I'm the same way. And so, yeah, it's always been a strange thing to me, people who really can hold on to grudges and stay mad. Like, I have good relationships with most of my exes. Like, we're not just, like, okay with each other, but like we actually like each other and like cheer for each other and are happy for each other when good things happen in our lives. And I like it that way. I don't like people who have meant a lot to me to all of a sudden to just for you know, in perpetuity be like, and now we just don't like each other. And that's, if I know that there's someone out there that I have bad blood with, it eats at me and I need to fix it. But there's a lot of people that are like, I'm totally cool staying in that bad blood.
For sure.
I mean, one of our fallouts that you and I had, a thing that I said to you is I was like, I got to figure out a way to make this right, because I've been in a situation where like I've had a friend die without fixing shit, you know? And that fucked me up. Like, it was like really, really hard to be like, one of the hardest things when Brad died was I was like, I thought I was going to get to fix that. I thought there was more time to let him know that I love him and that I'm not mad. And there wasn't, you know? And like, and now I have to sort of do that thing where I'm like, it's okay. Like, he knows, you know, and all that stuff. But I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, does he? Is he out there somewhere? Does he know? Yeah. Or did he die thinking that I hated him? You know?
I routinely, maybe a year will go by, maybe a couple, usually no more than that. If it's somebody that really means something to me and we've just maybe organically or maybe through some miscommunication or maybe it was a breakup, like, full disclosure, most of my breakups, like 90% of them,
were the other person's fault. Like, fuck them.
Yeah, they should die. No. I did used to, and I said this yesterday, and so I won't belabor it, but like, I did used to go like, oh, they broke up with me because they were the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken a lot of time for me to just go like, that's so inaccurate. And I'm not seeing it from their point of view. But I would, you know, I would love to repair with people that I have that longing. I want to do that. I want to, like I was going to say, maybe a year and a half goes by and I will reach out, even if it's really, really tough. A lot of the time it's not responded to and I don't get the satisfaction back, but I have that thing in me that I have to try, you know?
I've experienced that too. I definitely have a few people who are like, I'm good. Like, we don't need to talk. And I'm like, okay. And I, you know, and then you also have to like respect that too.
That's right.
You know,
because it can't be a thing, because what will eat at you is you're like, but I don't understand. I don't. And you have
because you're like, well, I'm not mad at you anymore. Like, enough time has passed that like, I'm not, so why are you still mad? But that's also like, there's stuff in this too, where like you and I each struggle with like needing to be liked as much as we don't want to need to be liked.
For sure.
It's in there. For and that's sure. just stuff that like performers and artists have, because we just want people to like us. We just, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so when someone out there who, especially a person who knew us well and who spent intimate time with us, is like, I actually am good if I never talk to you ever again, that's like, oh, that means that your experience of being that close with me
mattered more,
right? or no, set you up to go like, I'm good.
Oh, right,
to,
right.
I'm good to never talk to that person ever again. And that means like, oh, you know, it's so it's saying something about my internal brokenness when someone who is that close to me is like, I'm good. Like, you know,
it's heavy. It's really, really heavy. But I do think if you can kind of pay attention to it and practice what you need to practice as far as like releasing, realizing there's things you can control, things you can't control, and just doing that over and over and over, the repetition of that will actually get like make you pretty, pretty strong. I think it should be said. I think before we go any further, the thing that we should say is that we had a couple skirmishes. There was that big one, and then for a year, like we talked about yesterday, we were like not talking. 6 months, maybe longer. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it felt really weird, and I missed you a lot. And when we rekindled, you were like, we should do an episode on forgiveness.
Yeah.
So this has been a long time coming, and I wasn't like scared about it, but it feels very surreal to be here because you know, I think this is what you do really well, Austin, is that on this show and through, you know, your content work, is you're really fucking authentic. And so I thought this is the perfect place for two very like hard on your sleeve guys to say, hey, look, I didn't handle those situations really well. And I'm so glad that we're friends again, because for a guy like me who is a diehard romantic, I'm starting to figure out that actually, I mean, I'm saying this because I'm in this present point in my life right now where I'm single, but I actually think friendships are maybe more valuable than a lot of romantic relationships. I don't know if they crest familiar, but or familial, but yeah, man,
I know what you mean. I mean, I think it's, well, you know, it's different for different people, because some people really do have that romantic relationship that's like the lifelong thing. That's like, that's their primary relationship in their life that
Amazing.
they're going to be working, you know. And then there's, and this is something that you and I have been getting used to, and that lots of people live this way, is like they realize, oh, my life has been about chapters. My life has been about different people at different times, at least my romantic life. My romantic life has been about chapters. And my professional life has been about different cities and different eras. Yours has too. And the things that have really stood the test of time for me are like my family and my friends.
Period.
Yeah.
Like straight up fucking period.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's, I don't know. Like, it's so weird to be 43 and feel that I am my best version. Like, I'm not as well off financially that I'd like to be. I'm not as like fancy dance, but I'm so happy. I have such clarity. And I think the thing too that, and I don't know if I'm jumping ahead, tell me if I am.
I don't know where you are.
but you know, I think the thing that, when I think of forgiveness, that has been the biggest lesson for me is that, you know, and I know you go through this as well, forgiving myself.
This is where I wanted to go next anyway. So we're right. We're right on track.
I thought so.
Yeah. I wanted to get here anyway.
Well, you set it up.
But we're talking about it already. Like we're one of the things that makes moving on from romantic relationships hard and accepting that someone else is like maybe upset at you is like you haven't forgiven yourself yet for whatever it was that you did in that space. And you need that other person to forgive you. So like you're not capable of doing it on your own. It's a codependent thing. It's a thing of like I'll never be able to forgive myself until I hear from someone else that it's really okay. And I see from them clearly that they really are okay. But if I feel like they're still holding on to it, then I'm like, well, then I'm going to hold on to it.
Mm.
And it is a problem with not being able to forgive yourself. I also was thinking last night as we wrapped up and decided to move on to today, like, I think that there's this thing, and tell me if this vibes with you or not, or if you think that I'm full of shit, where like people are on a spectrum where some people are really good at forgiving themselves and struggle at forgiving others, and other people are really good at forgiving others and struggle with forgiving themselves.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously there's going to be people who are good at both and bad at both, but I feel like that's a thing where like people who are really good at forgiving, and because sometimes there's those people that like they forgive themselves for anything and everything right away. They never hold on to any,
right,
you know, like regret or shame or guilt for anything wrong that they do. Mm. But when it comes to when other people wrong them, they're like, oh, I will never let this go. Mm-hmm. And you're like, maybe you should find the middle ground of those two a little bit more. And then there's, you know, people like us who I'm like so eager to forgive other people because I just don't like having that bad blood and that bad feeling. And so I'm so eager to get to the point where I'm no longer harboring that anger and that resentment because it just is too much to go through my life with. And I can do that for other people all the time. And I want to, and I always want to repair those relationships. But when it comes to me, I'm just like, I'm hanging on to shit from when I was a little kid still. I'm still like, you shouldn't have done that, dude. I can't believe you did that. I'm still not letting go of that.
And that's the biggie. That is the crux of the whole thing, is that when you can start to wake up And it sounds very cliche. It sounds very of the moment. But like yourself a little bit more and be proud of your small and large victories. And that has been my saving grace in the last, I don't know, fucking 2017, 6 years, something like that, where I consciously made a decision to just unwire and untether myself from years of trauma, years of self-abuse, years of self-deprecation. I'm not perfect at it, but I don't hang on to the things that I think were really holding me back anymore. And I feel, whoa.
Let it out.
We knew it was going to happen at some point, motherfucker. I feel very free, Austin. And I'm only, you know, because we're talking about our friendship, too. It's like, you have to feel that safety, right? And I used to cry all the time, and I think that was just because I was in pain. And now I cry really at times when it just reverberates and when it's when it feels impactful and it feels clear. And, you know, I love my life now, you know? And that, I haven't always thought that or said that, and it gets dark in here. It gets dark. And my friends and my family and me are the ones I can always count on.
That's right. That's that third element.
I love hanging out with me, and not in a way where I want to tell everybody to fuck off and I want to cloister myself and get weird and, you know, be in a cave.
Yeah, not isolating.
No, I love finding out more about Whit, mm-hmm. or Whitby, you know, that boy. Like, I want to know him. Sorry.
No, it's really it's really beautiful, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and it, like, it's astounded me how difficult this is for me. Like, when people, I mean, geez, when I was first starting to get sober, I remember I went to a meeting where the theme was self-love and, like, loving yourself, and it was an idea that these people were talking about how they were going to teach me how to love myself, and in that meeting I was like, y'all don't know how much I dislike myself. Like, you guys,
good luck.
Like, it's not going to happen. And I was like, at best, I'll just, like, be less mean to myself. Mm. But I'm too aware of all the shit that I've ever done to all the people that I've done it to and all the ways that I've been a selfish fuck up to just be like, I'm great. Like, I just can't. I can't, you know, but, like, I used to sort of be kind of like cynically comedic about it, but you and I had an experience together where we did some breath work where, like, I had this communion with my higher self where it was like this breakthrough moment of this. I was talking to this, you know, kind of more centered, true version of myself that was like, hey, I know that this is a really hard thing for you, but I love you. And I know that's really hard for you to hear and to say, and it set off this whole chain reaction of, like, where I started incorporating into my morning meditation and my practice regularly, like, consciously, regularly telling myself, thank you for showing up for this. Mm-hmm. Thank you for showing up today for this meditation. And also, I love you. Mm-hmm. And just, like, getting used to saying that to myself. I've fallen out of that this year, and I really feel it. I've, mm-hmm. like, fallen out of telling myself I love you and telling, you know, I still do my morning routine because I have to, and I'm like, fine. And I stretch and I meditate, you know, and I, like, and I'm trying, and I go to therapy and I do my stuff, but, like, I've fallen out of the habit of reminding myself that it's okay to love myself. And I've noticed it. For people who struggle with self-love, you have to practice it. You have to.
Yeah. Because every day, different experiences, different people, just the rigors of life are going to test that. They're going to test where your canteen, what your level is at, and how much preparation you have, how much intelligence do you have, how much of your soul are you in touch with. I mean, I'm now doing these new things in my career, which feels like the fifth or sixth iteration of a career, air quotes, and it's literally all about me being selfless and teaching and directing and running classes. And there's nothing that I love more than these actors here in LA that have been going to auditions or classes and been on set and been in a rehearsal room, and they come to one of my workshops and they get to learn about themselves, and they get to learn about peace, and they get to learn about things that it's going to give them musculature to be an artist. And so all of these things are coalescing where, like, my internal work, my spiritual work, my artistry are all fusing. Mm-hmm. And that feels very special. And at 43, I feel young. I feel like excited. I feel so, so sexy.
Last night you were showing me old photos. You were like, look at me. And it was like 10, 15-year-old photos. You were like, look at me hanging out with this person or that person. And I was like, honestly, glow up. Awesome. You look cooler. You look cooler now. I've told you this too. I feel like you're thriving right now. I feel like you're like genuinely living your best life and in your best self right now. And it's really cool to watch as your friend.
Thank you, Austin. I mean, you and I don't, you know, that moment we had in the Aliens when you lifted me up after I struggled through that rehearsal process. I think we talked about that last time. Maybe not.
Maybe. I don't know.
That moment was dope as shit. When we were doing Bad Person and you stopped me in Andy's fucking kitchen during a break and you were just like, I haven't seen you like this in a long time and I missed you doing this. You've always been great. Your audience should know. I want to tell you, even if these cameras weren't fucking on, that like for you to say, I feel like you've glowed up. You said this to me in Salt Lake City. Like, you're so free with doing that. You're cute, dude. You're fucking cute. And you know why you're cute? It's because you're smart, buddy. It's because you're really smart and because you give a shit. And you've taught me about free, verbal, unabashed love of people that matter. And like, if you don't do that, if you don't stop your fucking life to check in and to make sure that people know that they're cared for, what are you doing? What are you doing?
We're doing the anti-Andrew Tate podcast
yeah,
tonight.
Fuck that guy, yeah, dude. Fuck
this is
that
the,
guy.
This is the podcast where sensitive boys come to be open and vulnerable with each other and with the audience and tell each other that they love each other. And that it's okay to cry, and it's okay to
totally. Yeah. It's the most punk thing. Actually, it's the most punk thing.
Yeah, it's the coolest fucking thing.
Putting on aviators and telling women that they're like dogs or whatever. Nah, man, you're done. You're over.
It's weird that you should say that, because I was actually just about to. I just do have some hot takes that I wanted.
Do you have
to
some
drop.
Hot takes?
I have some hot takes that I just want like it. Like, ladies, if you...
Keep going, please, keep going.
Ladies, if you're wondering why your boyfriend keeps crying while telling his friends that he loves them, it's because testosterone levels are at an all-time low. And that's why we need real men back in the men that are afraid of women who think for themselves.
It's so good. so good, dude.
God, I'm an idiot. No, I'm glad that we're not like that, and it's one of my favorite
Thank
things
God.
About me and my pals and the way that we are.
And it's contagious, you know? Like we have mutual friends that maybe this wasn't their like their go-to mode, right? But hanging out with you or me or us collectively, I'm leaving them nameless on purpose, but they are now softer and say, I love you at the end of phone calls. And I actually think that shit fucking matters.
I like how physically affectionate our friend Jess is. Jess likes to kiss a lot. And
it's
I love
amazing.
It. I love
it's amazing.
I love that I know every time Jess says goodbye to me, he's going to give me a big old hug and a big kiss on the cheek. Like a bit, you know, and I love it.
Feels great. Yeah. It feels great. And any of these goddamn, you know, stigmas and fears is all fear, man. It all goes back to fear.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, fear is the root of, like, I mean, that's our first episode. Our first episode that we did together was all about fear, and we're bringing it back.
Fear and forgiveness.
Fear and forgiveness. Fear is the thing that keeps us out of being able to forgive others, and especially ourselves.
Yeah.
I think I have a lot of fear of, like, when I forgive myself, when I love myself, who am I? With, like, for the longest time, I defined myself by the fact that I was, like, self-aware enough to know where my deficiencies lied and to know what, you know, that was important to me, to not, because I saw other people, the kind of people who are on the other side of the spectrum, who are really good at forgiving themselves but bad at forgiving others. I saw these people who, it's like, you don't seem to carry at all the weight of damage that you do. You seem to just move right through it and move on with your life and have a self-image that's like, I'm the shit no matter what. I mean, I watched this Dr. Phil clip the other day of like a teenage girl who was literally saying that, where she was like, I'm just better than other people. I'm better than everyone. She's like, so I don't feel bad for other people. I'm better than them.
Wild.
And it was a thing where it's like, that's a real thing that some people are walking around with. And I think that, like, it's not healthy, but I don't think that my opposite side of the spectrum is any healthier, where I'm giving everybody else space and grace and the benefit of the doubt, and I'm so fucking hard on myself. Like, I just am like, no, I'm not deserving of that much.
In both of those examples, I visually see that person wearing a huge winter coat, and that blockage, for whatever reason, takes on this visual for me of this huge puffy coat, and it just seems so heavy, and it seems unnecessary. And, you know, like, as we're talking about all of this, and I've been so ginger about stuff, but it's like, no, man, I forgive my bullies. I forgive you, Mauricio Buendia. I forgive you, Seth Remus.
He's watching.
I forgive you, Katie Brandenburg and Haley Royal and Morag Shepherd, and I forgive you.
Yeah.
Let's go get coffee if you wanna.
Yeah.
Because, like, my life's still going. I'm not getting any younger. And, yeah, call them out. Get to the root of the shit. Stop dancing around. Be brave. Because what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? Your coolness?
Yeah.
Coolness is, there is no monetary level to coolness.
You know, and the thing is that's funny is behind both extremes, the person who says I'm better than everyone else and I don't feel bad, you know, and the person who says I'm worse than everyone else, behind both is fear.
Yeah.
Because this clip of this girl on Dr. Phil, I was like, oh, she's so insecure.
Totally.
And so scared. And the way that she's learned to combat her internal fear of moving through the world is she's created a self-image that's, I'm impenetrable. It's rooted in fear.
Everybody that does something weird or shitty, this is going to sound so soapboxy, forgive me. They do that shitty thing or are afraid in what, they behave in a shitty way because of fear or pain. That's it.
Yeah.
That's legitimately it. We have an ex-president who I would say all the time, I was like, there's a real missed opportunity that, like, Anderson Cooper, Jake Tapper should have literally sat Trump down and two questions. What do you love? And what makes you happy? And if they had asked that guy that, we would have had a whole different story, because you have to answer that truthfully. It's a truth serum.
I don't know if anything's a truth serum with that guy. I think it's very...
But do you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so I feel like somebody that has insecurity and is angry, it comes from fear, it comes from pain.
I just see them both as the same thing, where it's like that person who's projecting, I'm the best, I don't owe anyone anything, I'm awesome, That's all fear. They have fear about the way that they're perceived by other people, or the things that could happen if they allow themselves to appear weak.
Yeah.
You know, so even Donald Trump, it's like, it's all fear. It's like, he's so afraid of being thought of as anything other than like the coolest guy in the world.
Well, you know why that is? Do you know why that is?
Why?
Because he doesn't have love, Austin.
Yeah, I mean,
his kids don't love him. His parents didn't love him. None of his wives loved him. He doesn't really have any homies, any like best friend chums like us.
But I think that what I was going to say to finish the thought is it's the same process for a person, because, yeah, maybe it is about love. Maybe it's about he doesn't have enough love. But I think it really is just like fear of not having enough love, or fear of like, because his response to that fear is, well, then I'm going to project this image that I'm the best, I'm better than ever, I'm the strongest.
Yeah.
You know, and my God, we're so burpy now because of our non-alcoholic beers. So burpy through this podcast. I have been, at least. My response to it is, I'm so afraid of being perceived by other people like for nothing other than my character defects and my faults, that I'm like, well, I'm going to get a head start on you, and I'm going to be more aware of my faults than anyone else could possibly be, so anything you could say bad about me, I'll be like, oh, don't worry, I've already said it. But it's the same thing.
Totally.
It's a defense mechanism against like being afraid of how I'm being perceived by other people.
I'm not perfect at it, but what the universe did really, really great for me. How long do you think I've been short, Austin?
I mean,
forever. I've been short the whole time. And I realized like that is just a thing. And I've sometimes let it be a thing that would trigger other stuff. But by and large, I don't think about it that much. I don't think about it at all.
You shouldn't.
No. And it's like, I've dated women that are 5'10", 5'11". I'll climb Machu Picchu. I don't give a shit.
Well, the thing is,
you make it your strength. Yeah. Whatever you feel is your defect or your liability. I mean, do I sound too Tony Robbins up in this
shit? No.
But like, you make it your strength.
You have no choice but to make it your strength. But also, like, I know, like, easier said than done. Like, it's not, we live in a world that puts a lot of emphasis on shit that we shouldn't put emphasis on. People's weight, people's height, people's like we put a lot of emphasis on shit that like we really shouldn't, and we do it for ourselves and we do it for other people, and it's not fair and it's not cool. But like, yeah, I think you do a great job at living in your body and being who you are.
We do make a lot of judgments on people, and I'm not going to get into the weeds on this one because it's boring, but there's I forgot a name, and I would like to forgive Natalie Delgado.
All right, yeah,
because I held on to a lot of pain and a lot of victimhood with that, and her side of the story, whatever that is, we don't have to get into it, is like, I release it. And I want that person to be happy and to thrive. And in no way do I feel like I'm compromising myself by saying that. In no way do I feel like, when you do that with somebody that you feel egregious shit has gone down, I've never felt the physical effects of feeling like I'm bending over or compromising myself. I feel the opposite. I feel freedom. It's crazy.
Hearing you do that and like say those names and be all bold, I'm like, that's a cool moment on this episode, is like saying like, right here, I want to just embrace it and go for it. Balls out. I forgive these people. And it's so interesting because I'm like, oh, who do I want to forgive?
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm like, well, what I would love to be able to do right here on the show is say, I forgive myself.
Good job.
Finally. But I fucking can't, Whit. I'm sitting here talking to you about this, and I'm like, that thing is still really hard for me. And it's so interesting to know that, to be here sitting across from you, watching you do it, and be like, oh, I would like to forgive myself. But be like, I don't know that I can just do it by just saying it. I just, like, I have such a difficult time with it. And it's something I want to continue working on. And I guess just for people out there listening or watching, like, keep at it. Like, you deserve it. You deserve to let go of the grudges that you have for other people, and you definitely deserve a life where you're not just living in a space where you're, like, constantly replant. I mean, I had a realization recently that was pretty powerful, and you talked about it a little bit. You talked about, like, getting to know Whit and being curious about who Whitby is and what Whitby likes. And, like,
I love to hear that name now. Put a pin in that. I for so long, because I was ridiculed and people would call me wimpy. I had a motherfucker in grade school call me shitby. And then every other kid would say, and now I hear that and I think that's hilarious. But, like, my name was used against me.
Yeah.
And it's probably within the last, like, 10, 15 years that name now is strength to me. And it's a town in England. It's a place I've been to. It defines a lot of me. I love it. And when people, I've told you this before, when people start to get closer to me, mm-hmm. or it's the people I've known for a long time, but anybody that's newer, I get closer to, and I won't say this to them unless they fucking hear this, I guess, they'll start using that name. And I go, oh, this just got to, like, this crested into a, like, a nice special place. Anyway.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm like hearing that. I'm like, yep, I have that same stuff. I have, like, people found ways to use my name to make mm-hmm. it about the thing that I was the most insecure about. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, like, I like girls that I was friends with mm. were relentless about my body because I was, like, so skinny and so bony that everything was, like, very it protruded out. I had, like, a sternum bone that was very visible and wow. ribs that were very very knobby, like elbows and knees and stuff, and they would call me osteoporosis because it was like a bone disease, and they would talk like, and it's like the you know, it's just things that, like,
kids they really find it they, that's so they, clever and they, terrible
yeah they Oof. Find a thing that you're like, oh, I didn't know that someone could a silly name could get at the root of, like, I have body images image problems. And I still do it. Like, people on the internet are still being like now I went from being too skinny to being like, oh, now I'm, like, insecure about my weight. And people, like, just know to be like, you're fat in the comment section. And I'm like, oh, how did you fucking know to say that? Like, how did you know to say that?
But do you know what you're doing, Austin? What? Is that you're doing exposure therapy by allowing yourself to be so public.
We're so burpy.
that like, you know, that's gonna come. You know, that's part of the gig. You know that, like, for all of the great connections you make, you are absolutely throwing yourself to the wolves, and you can't control them. You can't control that they're writing that stuff to you because they're in pain, and because they haven't rewired themselves to go, like, that's not a cool thing to type.
Yeah, I had a cool experience that I was going to talk about recently. That, like, it was part of that realization, like, in listening to you talk about being curious and curing that or healing that thing of, like, I had a problem with my name because of what kids said. Is it, you know, and but, like, that's part of, I think, working with your inner child and, like, getting mm-hmm. back in touch with that. And I'd never really done any, like, inner child work, but this is something I think I want to start adding into my day-to-day meditation as part of my process of, like, getting closer to being able to fully forgive myself and love myself again. I talked about earlier how, like, I used to do the thing where I'd be like, I love you, thanks for showing up, mm-hmm. and telling myself I love myself, practicing that. I want to start reincorporating that into my process, but I want to incorporate this other visualization that I had the other day. I was at the dentist, and I was having a panic attack in the chair, like I do, because that's just how I am. And I had this, I was talking to my therapist earlier this week. I had a realization. I had told her earlier that, like, my panic attack started around the age of 19 or 20 and have gone since then, because that was the earliest time that I remember them being really a problem.
Severe.
In my life. And I had this realization. I can't remember when. I think it might have been getting on the plane going to Ireland or something, that I was like, oh, you know what? This is really a lot like, and I think it's actually the same thing, is, like, I always had a really hard time as a kid getting up the courage to go on, like, roller coasters and stuff. And it would, and there was a lot of shame associated with that because I was friends with other kids that would go on them. Kids that were my age, kids that were younger. Yeah. And I, like, every year we would have, like, my dad's company would do a Lagoon Day. Lagoon's like a Six Flags theme park in Utah. And every year there would be, like, a company Lagoon Day. And every year I would, I would spend the year thinking about Lagoon Day is coming, and I have to, like,
stressful.
This is my year to go on the big roller coasters and not chicken out and not leave the line. But it was like a year of anticipatory fear, and there's also all this guilt and shame wrapped up in it, where I'm like, how come other kids are brave and I'm not? How come I, and like the feeling of standing in line and like having sweaty palms and basically having a panic attack at the age of like 6 or 7 and getting to the thing and then turning around and leaving. And then like the shame of being like, fuck, I chickened out. I wish I hadn't chickened out, you know? But also, I mean, and so I realized like, oh, this has been with me for a long time. Mm-hmm. So while I'm at the dentist, long story coming to the point, I was sitting in the chair and this thought came to me where I was like, think of the kid. Imagine your face of what you looked like as a kid. Think of this kid terrified in the line for the roller coaster. And you know, it's that same feeling. Your insides are on fire and you're freaking out and you're terrified and you just want someone to tell you it's okay. You don't have to go on the ride. You can get out of line, or someone to like hold your hand and help you get on the ride. You just need someone to help you. And I just like envisioned that kid. And then I imagined myself just like holding him as he's like screaming and squirming and freaking out, me in my adult body holding that kid and just being like, it's okay. And staying with him in the fear. Not telling him, shut up, stop crying. But letting him.
Just being there.
Letting him do it. Letting him freak out. Letting him squirm and like lose his mind. But holding him in it and just staying with him. And that visualization, like, it brought me to tears. I started crying, which like made the people in the office uncomfortable. They were like, why are you crying? And I was like, well, I'm having a panic attack, but I'm also kind of having a really beautiful experience with it.
They're like, cool, open up.
But I started, but I thought, that's an interesting exercise to do. That I'm sure other people have been trying to have been told by their therapist for years to do that exercise.
I've never heard that. That's great.
But like really thinking of what you looked like as a kid, as young Wit, when you're in those moments and being like, I'm going to imagine that kid. You know, a lot of people know what that kid looks like. A lot of people grew up with that kid. And I'm going to hold that kid and I'm going to let him be upset. And I'm going to let him be upset about people calling me shitby and stuff like that. And let him be angry and have that resentment. And I'm just going to hold him and just be the adult version, the 43-year-old version of me, the version of me that's like, it's okay. We made it, bud. It's okay. I'm going to just hold him, you know. I'm going to start trying to incorporate that.
Fucking Austin, you are the one that said this. This is your fucking quote. You're the one that's, and you said it to me. You're like, your 15-year-old self would be so stoked at who you were. And like,
I did tell you that. Yeah.
Hey man, sorry everybody if you thought this was just going to be a bunch of goofs offs and jokes, but this is the heavy one. Cause like, that's one of the most beautiful things that anybody has ever said to me. And like, I knew today was going to be raw. I wanted to come here and just like let it rip, because I think, again, it's most useful to use these moments, and what you do really well with authenticity is to not be performative. And like, I'm not great at it. I have an earring in. I wear nail polish. I'm full of a lot of lies and facades. And
do you think those things are lies and facades? I kind of think that you've been working really hard on finding like what Wit's aesthetic is.
My canvas is true. But you know, there are some elements that are very much like, I mean, if it's good for Harry Styles, it's good for me, right? So there is some sort of like,
I literally used to think the same. I used to think that like seeing somebody else do something and then being like, I want to do that was like, I'm being inauthentic. But no, awesome. I'm not. I'm seeing, and I think what's inauthentic is to pretend like you didn't just see somebody else doing it and went, I want to do that too.
Yeah, you know what? We've talked about this a zillion times. It's the same sort of thing when people start shitting on things that are actually good just because they're like out of date, or Wes Anderson, and people are like, oh, he's too twee. And it's like, but he's still one of the best.
He's one of like the 10 best.
And I'm sorry that like the aesthetic that he has crafted and been true to, and he's like such a nice guy, that sorry that for some reason triggers your insecurity. Why are humans so weird about that?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
He's a master whether you like it or not.
Yeah, sorry. And he's not stopping according to how like disgruntled you are.
But it's funny when people like that being inauthentic, people feel like they can catch you being inauthentic if they can point out where you got the thing from. Mm. So if they can point out, oh, well, Wes Anderson's just copying this director or that director. It's like, yeah, and he would tell you that.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, I made videos about it. I made skits about it, like, when I started wearing a chain and how it was, like, this whole existential thing where I was like, am I too late? Am I too late to the chain gang? And then I had to remind myself, like, no, it's totally okay to see something that someone else is wearing and go, oh, I like the way that that looks, and go, I want to do it, too. It's totally okay. You're totally allowed to do that. It doesn't mean that you're fake. That's what everyone does. The only fake people are the people who are pretending, like, they just thought one day of wearing a chain and they'd never seen it anywhere else.
At some point, somebody was like eating and the other person was like, what is that? And he's like, it's a fork. And the other person was like, fuck my hands. I'm going to use a fork too.
And then there was someone that was like, I want to use a fork, but will people think I'm just bandwagoning on the fork thing?
Yeah, that I'm just like, I'm just cheesy. I like the fork.
Yeah. So anyway, bottom line is... I think the point that we're getting to is like be nicer to yourself, and I'm gonna work on that, and we're working on that, and
this was a wild one, dude. Yep. Jesus Christ.
Forgive other people, forgive yourself. You deserve it. Don't really worry about whether or not they deserve it. That's their journey. That's their work.
Yeah.
Everybody's going through stuff. We're sort of coming to a nice landing zone here.
You want to say the people you don't want to forgive?
Yeah.
Just kidding. Just for balance.
Yeah, Megan Gibson, who started the osteoporosis name.
Fuck
you.
Her. Yeah, fuck you.
For real, like, I hope your life's not going well.
I was just trying to make a joke by putting pencil shavings in my teacher's tea, and Alicia Dangott raised her hand and said, Whit did it. Fuck you, Alicia Dangott. You fucked up my fourth grade.
I made up the name Megan Gibson. It's not real, but Alicia Dangott, that's a real name, right?
That's a real name.
Yeah, that's a real name.
That's a real name.
You talked earlier about you're doing courses now. You're teaching acting classes. Talk a little bit about it. Oh. Tell people if they want, if they're in the Southern California or Los Angeles area and they're actors and they want to work with Whit Hertford on learning how to love themselves a little bit more and be in their bodies and build the musculature of being a punk rock actor. How do they do that?
So you can go to any social media, Riot Act Theater, TRE, on Instagram. You can email me at riotact.
You mean T-R-A, the spelling of theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, right?
Correct, yeah. Correct. Not like a movie theater. And you can Google me. You can go to riotacttheater@gmail.com and just email me. But basically what it is I had to have these ideas through the pandemic because I messed around with this when I was living in London where I wanted to teach, you know, just little thoughts I had, not that I thought that I knew better. I had new philosophy as far as acting training, but I did feel like there was something I wanted to say. And it does circle around fear. It circles around the fear of not knowing who you are and internal work. And so it's called The Structure, and it's a four-tenant thing that kind of uses metaphors of biology, where, you know, it's blood type and lung capacity, skin graft, and it's a way to kind of use those metaphors to talk about what you have internally as an actor. Because during the pandemic, you know, self-tapes and all that stuff started, and I started to see people be really desperate and really anxious about just needing to get a job. And so there was a lot of tension, and then because you're recording, you can press stop, you can make it perfect. And perfect isn't in art. Like, that's not a thing. And the more that people were embracing this idea of perfect or an expectation, I felt that their, not only their performances were growing more hollow, and even people would come into our rehearsals and I would be like, you're normally really great, but you feel very much in your penthouse and this is now a cerebral endeavor rather than an artistic thing, which should be, you know, in your gut and your heart.
Yeah.
And so that's what we teach. And I'm doing it kind of like sporadically, but pretty consistently. And yeah, come hang out with us.
Fantastic. And you should, I mean, for real. And if you want to like know more about what Witt's doing, go to riotacttheater.org for real. Like, just look at the photos. Go look at like the photo galleries of old Riot Act productions and tell me that's not the coolest looking theater company you've ever seen. Tell me you don't look at those photos and go, oh shit, that's cool. And I want to somehow be a part of that or figure out what it is that they're doing. Go over to Witt's Instagram, you know, just like Witt Hertford on Instagram, and just like see what the dude is up to. And there's good stuff.
There's good stuff. There's some secret stuff that's happening right now, but it's a good time. It's a good season. And Austin Archer, you're one of the best friends I've ever had. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're a lifesaver.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too.
Yeah. Forgive you for everything.
Wow.
all the bullshit.
Yeah, man.
No. Yeah. I love you. Thanks for being here.
I love you too.
Yeah. Okay. Seems like the opposite of how it should be. Seems like a people pleaser should be a pleasing thing to be. But okay, so again, riotacttheater.org, go check it out. Go look at what Witt's been up to with his life for like the last 10 years. It's really, really cool. He's a very talented guy. And keep your eye on old Witt. He's gonna make some noise here coming up pretty soon. I have a feeling. I have a gut feeling that like you're about to see something real special from this guy. And if you're in the Southern California area, in the LA area, and you want to take a really cool, different acting class, see Witt about that as well. Yeah, I don't really have much to add. It's a good conversation with a very good friend. I was happy we had it, and I was happy that despite technical difficulties, it all worked out. So thanks for being here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Guys, the album is still for sale over on my Bandcamp, and it's Bandcamp Friday. This Friday, September 2nd, they're bringing it back. So if you ever wanted to get any of my albums from Bandcamp, any of my TikTok albums, or just even the digital copy of my new album, Beautiful Things, the Deluxe Edition, or if you wanted to order your copy of the double vinyl, you can get all of that this Friday. September 2nd, Bandcamp waives their service fee, and they don't take any of the percentage of sales. 100% of sales go to the artist. It's a great day to support indie music. Go check that out. Patreon.com/AustinArcher is another way that you can get on and be a producer on this show. Shout out to all my Patreon patrons. Y'all are the best people that I know. I think you're the best people in the world. I think I can safely say that the people who support me on my specific Patreon actually are the best people in the world. And if you're not one of those people, like, sorry about it. You are not one of the best people in the world. You're like a tier below, probably. I mean, if you're here listening, you're a tier below. But like, if you actually want to qualify for that extra special tier of like one of the best people in the world, then you got to be on that Patreon life, baby. Get it. All right. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next week. Love you so much. Bye-bye. The more I know, the less I know about anything you think if it's not.